Why is vulnerability awesome for some and terrifying for others? Welcome to the Therapy Brothers podcast.
I'm Brandon.
I'm Tyler.
We're brothers.
We're therapists.
And we know recovery.
Bring your stories, your questions, your successes with real recovery.
Hey, Tyler, you ready to have some hard conversations?
Let's do it.
Let the Therapy Brothers podcast begin. Can't wait for this one.
Right at the crux of a lot of what we do, I guess, right?
I guess so. Yeah. I think I was there for some of your most vulnerable moments in life.
It's probably mutual, I think. I was there for a lot of yours too. I was probably responsible for some of them.
So. I remember when this girl that you had a major crush on, like, came over to the house, and you were nowhere to be seen. I mean, she came over to, like, answer you to a dance or something, and you were, I don't know if you were hiding or what, but you were vulnerable.
I think I was sent on, like, a wild goose chase to get out of the house so that she could get into the house to answer for the dance.
Oh, okay.
But yeah. Maybe I was hiding. I was actually pretty socially backwards.
Remember that girl that you totally liked, like, totally, and she was, like, trying to set up so you could kiss her. Like, she was doing everything she could to be like, hey, Tyler,
oh,
like,
man.
Yeah.
This is how terrible that is, Brandon. Like, she basically, I really, really liked her. I kind of heard that she liked me. She set it up so that we could maybe have our first kiss together. And I was so terrified of that I didn't show up, you know? And then later, after I got done with high school, I still had a crush on her, but I was too terrified to actually go and just, like, talk to her. So I bought concert tickets to one of her favorite bands, which at the time was the Smashing Pumpkins, of all things. And then I bought tickets, and I was going to ask her to go to the concert. And then I went away to college, and I was too afraid to ask her. So I just went and dropped the tickets on her front porch anonymously. So she ended up taking another dude to the Smashing Pumpkins concert on my dime because I was too afraid to actually just go talk to her.
Oh, man. You had no game, man.
No game. Zero game.
I'm glad I didn't learn that from you, because I had a lot. I had a ton.
Oh, you certainly did.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's shift back into talking to Keaton here.
Let's talk about the opposite of what I did. And yes. Let's get Keaton on here.
Keaton, welcome.
Thank you, guys. Thanks for having me.
It's good to have you. Keaton's awesome. I've known Keaton for a while. But I'll have him tell you about himself. So, Keaton, if you could give us just a little bit of context, a little bit of background, and then we'll just kind of go from there.
Awesome. Thanks, guys. So, I don't know, about 4 or so years ago, my wife found out that I had a problem with pornography and sex addiction, which was a very, I kind of feel like my whole life had, like, thought this would possibly happen, but kind of dreaded that moment, if that makes sense. She found out, went to my bishop, obviously, talked to him, and kind of just dove into kind of therapy and started working on myself. The addiction started when I was really, really young, grew up kind of in a rigid environment, with a family. I'm the oldest of 10 children. Had this kind of expectation set on me that I'm the example, which I felt like was a blessing and a curse in a lot of ways. And then also was raised, in the LDS culture, which is, I felt like, also can be very rigid, but it's also a very big blessing. I mean, it's blessed my life in so many ways, but there are some things that I feel like created a lot of shame. So there's that rigidity that I felt like caused, that didn't help with being open. So when, my wife found out, I kind of played the trickled out disclosure. Didn't want to tell her the whole truth. Went to my bishop, and the first thing he said is, I think something that will help you is if you talk to, your father-in-law. And Brandon remembers this.
I remember because you talked to me like the day you were flying out there or something.
Yeah, I came in to talk to you, Brandon, and I was like, dude, I need a plan, because he was a mission president, and I thought, look, the moment he finds out about my addiction, he's going to tell me just to leave. So there was a lot of fears, and I felt like I just didn't know what to do, you know? And from the very beginning, I felt like, Brandon's done a really, you gave me a lot of hope in the curriculum that you've kind of helped me understand and what it means. So I feel like I kind of wanted to talk today about my journey of kind of vulnerability, because I feel like at the beginning, I was the complete opposite. I had friends in high school, like really good friends, like I never was asked to take a drink of alcohol, to do any drugs, had incredible friends. And I remember in high school, some of my friends, we were sitting on the front porch of my friend's house, and he said, oh yeah, that guy, we call him Porno Pete. And in the back of my mind, you know, I had this, well, if they only knew the problems that I had in my life right now, you know, they wouldn't be my friend. They wouldn't. And sadly enough, I feel like it's the opposite. As I've kind of gone through my recovery journey, that same friend, that the house that I was at, I've opened up to him about my recovery process, my addiction, you know, and how far it led me down the path to what I thought was true love, and it really wasn't, because I was entering this life, this second life that I was living, and I was trying to hide that second life because I was so ashamed of it.
So Keaton, you're now on here. That was, so you're kind of telling the backstory of how you went. If I'm understanding right, you want to talk about the process of going from being the kid who can't even speak the secret, who can't even get it to the tip of your tongue to speak whatever you feel vulnerable about, to then getting married, going through D-Day, still living without vulnerability, without honesty, to 4 years later, you're now in a spot where you're going, I'm starting to taste the goodness of being able to just be open and honest and be vulnerable. And you want to talk about the difference between why some people can't bring themselves to be vulnerable and how you're finding freedom in the process of being more vulnerable. Hence the reason you're probably on the show right now.
Yeah, because it took me a long time. Like I saw the benefits of opening up to my wife, but I told myself forever, I said, I would never tell my siblings. I'll never tell my in-laws. And that's all changed. I've opened up to my entire in-law family, which was probably one of the scariest things I probably ever had to do, but I felt like it was the right thing to do, you know, and told things that I was like, you know what, if they hear about this stuff that I've done, then they'll never look at me the same. They're not going to love me. You know, and the reaction I got was completely different. Which was very, very surprising. The reaction I got from my father-in-law the day I told him about my problem, and then the day I told my family, and then the day I told also my entire in-laws, it's just very different than what I perceived it my entire life, if that makes sense.
I want to back up a little bit, Keaton, and just kind of really illustrate this, like, and flush this out. You said a couple of things that are interesting. The oldest of 10, raised LDS, a lot of pressure to be good, to be a good example, all these things, you know, so there you are, like, okay, I've got a lot of weight on my shoulders in order to be a certain person. I need to be this person. But at the same time, like, I've been looking at porn, masturbating, like I've got these secrets going on that only I really know the extent of, you know. And then fast forward to sitting in my office saying, cat's out of the bag, Brandon. I can't avoid it. I have to fly to father-in-law's, look him in the eyes and say, like, this thing is happening, right? So I met you at this place of almost almost in a way forced vulnerability. It's like, Keaton, there's nowhere to hide. Like, yeah, you can minimize things, you can justify things, you can still try to get around things, but you are flying to his home and you are going there and you're going to look him in the eye and say these things. Your wife already found out. Just describe a little bit more that moment of, I would say, terror, maybe.
That
the gig is up.
Yeah, man, that, I don't even know how to explain. I was shaking, like, oh man, I don't even know how to explain that experience. I thought my whole life was over. I thought my marriage was over. I thought I was going to lose my kids. You know, and I just, as I was walking in, I didn't know what to do. And I know I had met with you and you kind of given me this plan of like, because I knew that was going to be a question he was going to ask me. And what didn't, and what I feel like added a little bit to it was when I got home from my mission, he was the stake president. So he kind of was the one, and he, I mean, he gave me tickets to go to the BYU football game to go on my first date with his daughter.
Oh wow.
So like, he was like okay with it. I felt
he endorsed you
essentially. Yes. And then now for me to come in and say, hey, I've done all this stuff, and I've obviously, I didn't go into all the details, but like, just, I've really hurt your daughter. And the reaction I got was, I don't even know, it was shocking. Not the reaction I was expecting. He basically just told me, yeah, it sucks, isn't it? It's so hard. Mm-hmm. Like he understood, you know, like there was no shame. There was no why. There was, all it was, how can I help? I know it's hard. And how can I help you get through this?
Wow.
Is the approach. And it kind of made a little bit of a shift, because I was still, there was stuff in that I was so scared to go into details with. I mean, I still hadn't done my disclosure with Aaron. Mm-hmm. I hadn't told her the entire story, but it was kind of the start of like, wait, maybe what I perceived from this addiction and from all of these things I've done is that people will still love me regardless of the mistakes that I've made, you know. And I didn't believe that until I didn't even believe it in that moment, but I started to see the glimpses of hope, I guess, mm-hmm. At that moment. But there was still sheer terror of like, oh my gosh, I don't know how I'm gonna approach him. Mm-hmm. And it's just the anxiety that I had before going there was just, and then like, I still have anxiety. I feel like even before coming on with you guys today, like my heart rate increases and stuff, you know, anytime I feel like I'm vulnerable, it's not like it's not comfortable to do that.
Right.
You know, but I've just seen the healing that it really does as I've stepped into it more and more and more. And I feel like it's kind of like it, I want more of it as I've become more vulnerable almost.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's hard to explain.
Mm-hmm. It's like when you start to have these experiences, which is really kind of a cool, the way you just described this, Keaton, thinking about vulnerability. You thought you were going to receive condemnation and judgment in a couple of these moments, and instead what you received was grace, understanding, and love. And that started to open your heart up to this idea that, oh, like maybe vulnerability is actually the pathway to freedom, to wholehearted living, when my whole life I've been afraid of it. And so you bring out a couple of things that are really interesting with this concept of vulnerability. One is that even now, as you go further and further into your own recovery journey, it's not really vulnerability unless there is some kind of risk or fear attached by nature, right? It's not vulnerable if you can't get hurt, right? Yeah. It reminds me of something that I, you know, heard Brené Brown say one time about vulnerability with her research, that vulnerability in and of itself is not good or bad. Vulnerability is necessary for wholehearted living. It's just the passport into wholehearted living, but it also comes with risks and fears. And that's where I think people get stuck. You know, I'm thinking of, this is where Brannon should cue up, you know, the Joseph Campbell quote.
The cave you fear to enter holds the treasure that you seek.
There you go, Brandon.
Thank you, like, Tyler. Whenever I can say it.
Yeah. That's it, though, is that over and over again now, Keaton, you're starting to have these iterations of, oh, here's a new cave. I'm still scared to go in there. But you're starting to have experience now where when you go in there, you've started to realize you can conquer the dragon once in a while, and you can have the treasure that comes with it. And it becomes its own sort of snowball that starts to unfold, that the more you can practice vulnerability, especially in the right places where you get it held, allows you to have more courage to step in further. And then you find more freedom, more confidence. And eventually you're going to get to a place where you can take your vulnerability to places where people will reject you still, and you'll still be okay with having done it, because you know the truth of who you are already. And it's not about your performance. It's not about their perceptions. It's about your integrity.
Right. Yeah.
I just a couple stories to go along kind of with what you're talking about, Keaton. And what Tyler's saying. I remember years ago, I was working with this young guy, who was engaged and had a porn problem, and really wasn't that serious of a porn problem, but he had a porn problem, hadn't told his fiance about it. Was talking in group, and what do you know? What do you think his group told him to do?
Talk about it.
Yeah, go tell her, right? And they were saying things like, you know, she'll probably be sad, but she can work through this. And he told her, and she dumped him, and he never saw her again. So he came back for a little while, devastated. His biggest fears came true. I'm unlovable. I'm not okay. His biggest fears came true and kind of cemented some of those beliefs inside of himself. But there was another thing that happened that was really fascinating. He felt some relief about owning himself. He felt some love from the group in his pain of that rejection. And there was some growth that I saw, even though he was vulnerable. Your father-in-law, thank goodness, was loving and Christ-like, gave you some grace, gave you some love. Thank goodness. He could have gone the other direction, Keaton. And that's the vulnerability of it, right?
Yeah, that's the risk. Yeah.
That's the risk. Yeah. I just invested some money and I lost it all. Like, shoot. Like, it was a risk. It was vulnerable. If it wasn't a risk, then there's not vulnerability there. And it comes back to Tyler's quote. If I go into the cave and the dragon, you know, bites my limbs off, there's a really cool thing. And it's this resiliency to the vulnerability. And you know where it comes? It's in growth mindset. It's in turning your will and your life over to the care of God. If I know God wants me to go in that cave, and I go in that cave and I get my limbs torn off, then that was exactly what needed to happen. If I know God wants me to go in that cave and that dragon gives me a big hug and says, I love you, and I have a great experience of love, then that's exactly what was supposed to happen. But the important part is God wants me to go in that cave. So I'm going to step in not knowing where this is going to land. And that's when you get to that place of growth mindset and connection to God, then there's not risks that, yeah, they're scary, but I'm willing to take it, right? Is that, Keaton, how does this sit with you?
Yeah, I mean, at first I was like, I don't know, maybe I've seen the rewards, you know, and I haven't had a true bad experience, I guess. yet being vulnerable. But every single time I am, I think about those risks and I think about the pain I could. I'm like, you know what? If one of her brothers were to say that I'm like kind of distance himself from me, I'd be okay with it. Mm-hmm. It would hurt, but I would be okay with it. But I feel like I had to almost think about that risk and the reward prior to being vulnerable. And I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but I had to process it and say, okay, if I go do this and the reaction isn't what it's like, it's not a good reaction or it, because I'm a relationship person. So I want a good relationship with every, like all my siblings, all nine of my siblings, I have a separate relationship with each one of them. And each of all of them means a lot to me. So if I don't have a good relationship with them, I will try to fix it because it means so much to me. So I feel like that was the one fear I had when I was going to go to like my family and then also my in-laws was, okay, well, is this going to ruin a relationship? Or are they going to think different of me? But I had to be in a place of like, well, if they do, that's okay. Mm-hmm. You know, but it didn't, like that shift didn't take go overnight because I felt like for so long, I mean, I don't know, 2.5 years where I felt like, yes, that would impact me. If they didn't talk to me anymore, it would ruin the family dynamics.
But Keaton, that's where turn your will in your life over the care of God comes into play, because it's not turn your will in your life over the care of sibling or in-law or like, oh, I better make sure that they love me. It's I want like God is telling me to be an honest, open man. And I love them and I hope they love me back. But the important thing for me is that integrity. The important thing for me is stepping into that truth with God. And then I can surrender over, like that's on them how they respond to this. They can love me back. They can reject me. But I'm going to step in here between God and I. And if I'm being told to disclose, then that's what I need to do. Right? And so oftentimes we worship everybody else because we're afraid of their rejection. And that's what really gets in the way of our integrity. So we hide things and we manipulate rather than knowing ourselves and knowing our relationship with God and acting in that truth, which can be very vulnerable.
It's an interesting thing, you guys, where, you know, you said something, Keaton, that you were worried about, you know, you had to weigh out what might happen if you told the truth and what could happen in those relationships, which I think is a natural thing. And where a lot of people make the mistake is they feel like if they don't live in the truth, they're working on the relationship, when in reality, the best place to work on any relationship is from the place of the truth.
Yep.
So, and you know, there's a quote that I have on my other office wall that's from John Foster that says, a man without decision of character can never be said to belong to himself. He belongs to whatever can make captive of him. And in a certain sense, going back to what you're saying, Brannon, the only place where we can actually put our decision of character is back onto a higher power than ourselves, and to operate from a place of the truth. So, you know, Keaton, it doesn't mean you couldn't still work on, let's say your brother-in-law looks at you and is like, oh my gosh, you're the biggest dirtbag. You are dead to me. You know, at least you're working on the relationship starting from the place of the truth. Whereas if you were just performing all the time and he's like, Keaton's the man, we're going to the BYU game together and we're going to go sit on the porch like when you were a teenager, pretend that neither of us have any problems and it's going to be awesome. It's like, Keaton, ask yourself, I just can't get this image out of my mind, sitting on the porch with your friends, because number one, I think I'm having some transference because I think I've done that before.
Tyler's had that experience.
I've had that exact experience, like being the guy who was.
Well, guess what? All the friends that were on the porch with you guys, they were having the same experience.
Yeah,
well, at the same time.
In my situation, my buddies were open about it, and I was the only one who couldn't be open about it.
Oh, interesting.
Because I had the nickname of, like, my nickname was the prophet, you know. So I'm like, oh yeah, you guys, you shouldn't be doing that. Meanwhile, as soon as I go home, I'm running down in the basement and doing my thing, right? Like,
But Keaton, juxtapose both of those things against each other, sitting on the porch with your friend and having that conversation and how connected you felt to them or anybody else versus the kinds of connections that you're having when you're operating from a place of the truth. And even the places where you might get rejected, but in most cases, if you were to put a rating on connection of 0 to 10, what was the rating sitting on the porch with your friends?
0. They didn't even know who I was. I mean, they knew my hobbies, and that's really it.
Yeah. Okay. There you go. And that's it. That's the depth of your intimacy. And then juxtapose that against this conversation you have with your father-in-law or with one of your brother-in-laws. Where would you put the connection on those kinds of things?
After I talk to them?
Yes.
Oh. Like a 10, honestly, because I felt like I was saying, this is who I am, and I'm okay with it.
Yeah.
You know, like.
What? Go ahead, Keaton.
It's just, I don't know how to explain it. Like, there was like, I kind of got like sad because I felt like, you know what? I wasted my entire high school time, which I loved high school. Like, high school was super fun for me. And I still hang out with my buddies, you know, from high school. But I was like, I literally wasted that whole time and without being authentic. You know, they didn't really know who I was, and I really probably didn't. And I didn't even open the door because for me now I realize that like when I have been vulnerable, it opens the doors for them to share stuff that they're struggling with, whether it was porn related or not related. Does that make sense? Like it provides a deeper connection that I had no clue even existed.
Think you about know, like your, it's Keaton. Think about Aaron, you know, 4 years ago, this is what's crazy.
Aaron is Keaton's wife, right?
Yeah. Four years ago, you know, before you got busted, you had this belief that I need to manipulate and hide in order to be loved. Right. And my guess is that your intimacy and your relationship is much better now, 4 years later, after doing all this work and actually owning who you are versus when you were trying to manipulate to be loved.
Yeah. 100%.
So it's backwards. But that's how it works. The vulnerability allows for the intimacy. Where we believe that the vulnerability is going to lead to rejection. And so I'd rather not be vulnerable and hedge against that, protect against that, right? Which is a lie.
Yeah. And it's just a protective part that I feel like I had.
I think, Brandon, you bring up a point too, I'm trying to put myself in the position of our listeners and going, there's several listeners right now going, yeah, but I've been on the end of being rejected when I've been vulnerable. I've been on the end of like, you know, and so there's that kind of pushback that's always going to be there. And I think part of what is coming about in this episode is that we have to change how we view getting rejected.
Mm-hmm.
It's because we can be rejected. Mm-hmm. You know, I have been rejected for sharing my parts of my story. I've lost friends as a result of having shared my story. Right. But if I have a core belief that their rejection means something about me, that's the issue.
Yes.
More than the rejection itself.
The rejection's just more learning and growth toward deeper love and connection with other people in your life.
And it sifts out the wrong people and puts in the right people. Mm-hmm. That's what I've come to understand. But if I have a core belief that anybody's rejection means I'm not good enough,
yep,
then that makes the fear of the vulnerability that much bigger. And so I have to go to work on that core belief about rejection,
yes,
and what it means in order to then step myself further into that space of being able to be more real, more vulnerable, to live in the truth.
Yep. Yep. It's interesting. And Tyler, you know, I think of our brother and, you know, go to a family party and like back in the day, if you have a lot of shame and you're like, yeah, you know, let's say you walked in, you're like, yeah, I went to a, you know, a casino and I lost a bunch of money, and like, you're all shame based. And like, you know, the family would be like, oh my gosh, like, what did Tyler do? You know, if he, our brother comes in, he'd be like, oh my gosh, guys, I went in, like, I lost. He's just wide open about it. He's just like, this is me. Like, oh, they're like, oh man, like, that's rough. And there's this energy of like connection and kind of funny. And like, we're talking about it. Right. And you can feel the difference when the shame is there. Right.
Yeah.
And you can feel the difference when there's just openness and like, yeah, like, I own who I am. I know that I fail. I know that I struggle. I know that I'm imperfect. This is I. Right?
This is it. This is me.
And coming back to what you were saying, Keaton, that then opens up for other people to be like, oh, like, I'm okay too. Like, that is so loving to be able to be vulnerable like that. I want to back up, Keaton. There's a part to your story that I want to get to. And it's the part where, and I want you to speak to this a little bit. And so you get vulnerable. You're working through disclosure. You're wanting to do the disclosure right. And there got to be this place of anxiety around complete openness, right? Like, you wanted to make sure everything was on the table. You wanted to make sure you were being honest. And that actually wasn't vulnerability, but you thought that it was, right? Could you speak to that some?
Yeah. Yeah, that was basically me just, because it turned into hiding stuff still to then over just like, I literally couldn't even, I was like, I have to tell every single little detail. And it was basically, it was selfish because I was basically taking all my crap and then now just dumping it on to Aaron, saying, here, take care of my crap that, because I can't deal with it right now. So, and yeah, you're right. 100%. It was not vulnerability.
It was fear. It was fear and control, and then dumping on her to make sure that you're okay. Right.
Correct. 100%.
Yeah.
Cause I was like, I want God to be okay with me. So I have to I have to tell everything.
Yep. Yep. And Tyler, I'm sure you've had clients like this. That's not vulnerable because why, Tyler?
Well, because it's still not authentic. Yeah. Like it's still in a way it's still its own performance rather than just straight authenticity, right? I'm performing now because then God will love me. I'm performing now because that's what a good boy would do, instead of just going, no, this is me. Like, this is me. You can feel the difference in the energy of those things, kind of like what you were talking about earlier, Brannon, of I'm still in some ways curating the way that people are going to choose to see me, because I'm still in my own way fearful of their judgment or fearful of God's judgment, in a way that I'm still performing.
That's good, Tyler. Yeah, it's interesting because to some people, like Keaton, here you are sharing your story on a podcast, public forum. People can share this. People know Keaton's name. You are being vulnerable by being here.
Big time.
And to other people, like, I could call up an old client and say, hey, be on my podcast next week. And the vulnerability for that person might be, you know what? Thanks, Brannon, but no thanks. That doesn't feel in alignment with me and what I'm supposed to do and who I am. I'm good. I'm going to be honest with you and not caretake for you and not come on your stupid podcast. Well, he wouldn't say stupid.
Maybe.
But yeah, maybe.
But that's vulnerable, Brannon, because it's still pressure on your relationship for him to say no to you.
Right. And I guess the point that I'm making is there's a difference for all of us as to who we are in our authentic selves. I'm going to step into this or not. And so there's this uncomfortable space, Keaton. And I think it's important to understand, of when it comes to disclosure, when I'm an honest man, sometimes that honesty, and I say this carefully because the addict mind can run with this, sometimes in that honesty, I know that this doesn't need to be disclosed and my anxiety doesn't need to be taken care of. And I'm just going to let this thing go. And then there's the other side of it. I know this does need to be disclosed and I'm not going to minimize it and manipulate and pretend like it's not there. So there's this really strong place of knowing that this is my truth and this is what I need to step into. Right. So it doesn't always look like walking around naked, sharing every last secret that you've ever had. That's not vulnerability. Right.
Yeah. I mean, I think, because I've thought about that too, like, I don't think I could get to a place of like, just, you know, getting up and giving a talk and sharing, you know, all my story and what I've done. You know, it's like, okay, I can't do that, you know, but if it's in the right setting and I feel good about it, I feel like it, like in a one-on-one or in a group setting where I'm like, you know what? I think this is a good place to be vulnerable, because I feel like for so long, I felt that rejection, Tyler, that you were kind of explaining, that I was like, I can't do it because of this. And I just don't like, because I feel like it, like now, like I feel like anytime I talk or anything in church, I talk about vulnerability because I want, because it's changed my life. I'm like, you know what? Like these kids or the people now just need to hear the struggles. They don't need to hear how perfect we all are.
Yeah.
You know, they need to hear how we've struggled and then overcome it. Not how this is how I've read the scriptures or this is how I, you know, do this and this correctly. Because there are so many people, which I was one of them, that are sitting there saying, yeah, but you don't know because I'm dealing with this. You know, and if I talk about it, then I'm going to be rejected. You know, then I'm going to disappoint, then I'm not going to be living up to be the example for others and my family, for others, whoever it might be. You know, it's just a hard dynamic, I feel like, because I feel like I want to talk about it, but at the same time, how do you, I feel like the only way to open for that connection is to share.
Keaton, it's interesting with how you're speaking to this, and maybe this is something, this is one of the criteria I kind of use for myself on when I should share and when I shouldn't. Obviously I take it through God first, but I really like this idea in recovery, moving from a fixed mindset to a growth mindset. This quote that says, you no longer have a secret, you have a story. And if you think about what stories are meant to be told and they're meant to be shared. And the reason why you would tell a story or share a story is because it will edify the people that you're sharing with. Right. So one of the criteria for me to share is if I feel like my story is going to be a benefit to the life of the person or people that I'm sharing with, it's on me to share it. And I liken this to a scripture that I don't think anybody really ever likens vulnerability to this or the story to this, but it says, neither do men light a candle and put it under a bushel, right? Where do they put it? They put it on the hilltop for all to see, right? The story itself is the light. It's the candle. And vulnerability is the thing that either tries to push us to put that candle under the bushel and hide it. And in doing so, we deprive the very people that we love of the opportunity for growth, connection, and edification, when instead we feel impressed that our story actually can make a difference in their life, we take it out from underneath the bushel and we share it.
Carry your candle for all to see it. I just want to say this. I kind of just want to just give some praise to God a little bit. Just knowing Keaton, how much I appreciate you. You know, I've watched this kind of from the sidelines, your recovery process. And, you know, the oldest of 10 needs to be Mr. Perfect. And this sounds backwards, but look at God working in your life to fight for you. Like, this whole addiction thing is perfect because it's brought you to your knees and gotten you to know yourself and know that you're loved no matter what, to put people like your father-in-law in your life. And like the woman that you're married to, like to say, I still love you, even in your imperfections, has helped you feel how God loves you.
And look at how God can now work through you in the very same relationships that you felt so much pressure to perform in. Like, how lucky are your siblings that they have an older brother who says, you don't have to be perfect. Like, you just gave all 9 of your siblings permission to no longer have to perform.
How lucky are your children who get to have a dad who teaches them that they're loved no matter what in their imperfections?
God makes it possible. It's beautiful. Keaton, what's going through you right now emotionally? What are you feeling?
I don't know. I feel like my whole life I've had this weight of performing. And as I haven't, and as I've told my story and the healing that's come and the burden that's been lifted, is like, so you can't express it really, you know. And Brandon, you're right. I feel like for me, a big shift for me has been like the connection that I have with God. I feel like for so long, God had these expectations on me, you know, and he said, well, you're not performing, so I'm disappointed. And I felt like I really had to, I remember your guys' podcast, Do I Need to Fire My God? And I loved it because I felt like it at first I was like, well, what are they talking about? Like, fire my God, like believe in a different God. Yeah, at first I was like, what the frick? What are these guys talking about? But the way I took it was the relationship, the unhealthy relationship that I had in connection with God. And I really realized, I was like, you know what? This relationship I have with God has been so unhealthy. I need to change it. From God has expectations on me to God has expectations I'm going to fail. All he really has is hope. You know, he has no expectations of me performing perfectly. You know, all because an expectation is basically him knowing what is going to happen in the future. And God knows that I'm not going to be perfect, you know. But I felt like for so long, a lot of it is myself. I put these expectations on myself, you know, and I think part of it is in the environment and the, like when growing up, like being a leader in the church, like being, you know, in the priest quorum advisor and, you know, like, or the president of the teacher's quorum and all of that I had to perform and that these expectations were set upon me. And if I disappointed, then God would be disappointed with me. When in reality, I felt like that wasn't true, you know, but it took a long time for me to get to that place. And I feel like understanding now that God loves me and all he cares about is for my progress. You know, he knows he expects me to fail.
Do you see the link, Keaton, between what you just said and the practice of vulnerability? That you went from God didn't change in this equation. Your attribution of who God was and your relationship with God is what changed in the process. Do you see a link between the practice of the vulnerability that you've been practicing for the last several years and your current relationship with God?
Yeah, 100%. And I feel like it turned into like this because you talk about like the rejection, right? And that fear, because that is 100% what caused, I feel like, this hide in this secrecy. But I feel like vulnerability got easier as my relationship with God really changed, because I said, well, if they do reject me, that doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Because all that really matters is my relationship with God.
Yeah.
You know, and I know that he's proud of where I'm at, and that's okay. That's all I care about. But it took a long time to get to that and make that shift. You know, it's not like it's just like a light bulb effect and all of a sudden, boom, now I can share my story.
Yep. That's the key to it all. And it still doesn't mean that it's not scary to step into that cave. But that's the key to it all. It's a catch 22. You don't. And so when you first step in the cave is the scariest, because you don't really know. You don't really know that God has you until you're willing to step into that dark a little bit. But once you do it some, then it's like, hey, like I have this relationship with God now. I'm acting in faith. I feel that because I've acted in faith, not in fear and control, to try to get that relationship with God. So now that I know that, now it's not so scary to come on a podcast. It's not so scary to speak in church about certain things or disclose certain things to my wife. I do want to say before we wrap up, it's interesting. There's like an individual healing that takes place with vulnerability that's beautiful. When somebody starts to practice this, they start to resonate differently. But then there's another thing that happens. And, it's that thing where, what is God doing to me? What is God doing for me? What is God doing through me? And I've seen, and I continue to see, the ripple effects that your recovery is having in the world, Keaton. And like just the men that you've helped through your recovery in your own groups. The other day I mentioned in my staff meeting, like, yeah, Keaton's coming on my podcast. And I had like three therapists be like, oh, I love Keaton. Like he's awesome, you know? And like that there's this swell of love and goodness going out from you, Keaton, because of your practice of vulnerability. And just keep going, man. Keep doing what you're doing. You got a ways to go. I do too. We all do. But you get it now. You've experienced it now. So keep moving forward with it. I really appreciate you, Keaton. So thank you.
Keaton, thanks, man. Brad. This is my first time meeting you. You can feel your energy. I hope that our listeners can feel it through the airwaves and through the screen, whatever way they're watching or listening to this. I just want to say to you, Keaton, that there's a piece of me that would love to just sit down on the front porch and hang out and have a conversation. And
I'd love that. That'd be awesome.
Yeah, that would be, and it would be really awesome.
You wouldn't call each other Porno Pete?
No, we'd probably swap stories about the cringe that we felt in all of those situations. You know, but no, seriously, man, thank you for coming on. You've got a great energy to you, and love your courage. And I hope people can feel this as you're talking. The reason why I love what we do for a job is because when people finally grasp these principles and they start to live them, they become new creatures. And I don't even know, other than the story you shared today, your past, but I can feel the newness inside of you. I can feel the passion. I can feel the energy. There is a life now that's out there worth living, even with all of its pain and struggles, because you're tapping into these true principles. And thank you for your willingness to come on and share those things today.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
You guys, if this was helpful, leave a review. You can mention Keaton and just give him a thanks, and be willing to share it as well. So thanks, guys. We'll see you.
Thank you.